From Akron, Ohio, this is episode 39 of On the Tropes. I'm your host, Nick, and on today's episode, we're going to talk about the movie Gravity. Joining me today are...
Sir.
Kyle.
And special guest...
Alex.
Gentlemen, what is new?
You know, I've been watching a lot of the series like Wise Guy from the 80s.
Yeah, you were telling
starring
me about
that. Ken Wall, who I hate other than this. Like, he's just this weird 80s actor who kind of is like an early... lesser version of Brendan Fraser, and
it's hard to do.
It's really good though, because it's like he's infiltrating the mob. Like each season, it's I guess it's kind of like a different syndicate, and it's really gritty. Like we were talking about The Departed a few episodes ago, and about how Leo spends like 18 months in prison. He does that in Wise Guy too, and it's like completely estranged from his family. And so yeah, just been watching old mob TV. Totally pathetic.
Thanks. Kyle, what's new with you?
I actually just finished watching Blue is the Warmest Color.
Oh, did
and,
you?
And I didn't enjoy it as much as you did.
Really?
Yeah, I don't... Did you watch the 3-hour long version of
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah.
Is that the only one that is out there? Why is that movie 3 hours long?
I don't know.
It's so long.
It's pretty long.
I haven't seen it.
I mean, it was good and it was fine, but I don't know if it was like...
Top 10 material.
Yeah. That was really the only reason that I watched it, because you put it on one of your favorite movies of last year.
Yeah. Stand by it.
Yeah, there were some really good scenes, but overall, yeah, I just think it was...
The main character is such a good actress.
Yeah, she's really awesome. Yeah, and their relationship is believable, but I don't know. It kind of went on a little too long, but...
I feel like the sex scenes went on for way too long.
Yeah, they could have gone on for... I don't know, even though 30 seconds, and they would have gotten their point across because of all that shit that they showed. Like,
it's like 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's and like, it, at that point, it's like, what are you watching? Like, yeah. I already have this.
Like, another, I don't know. How did you... Did you watch that in theaters?
Format. Yeah, I saw
how
it
did
in
you
theater.
Watch that in theaters with, like, a bunch of random people?
It was uncomfortable.
Like, two feet away from you.
Yeah. It was an uncomfortable moment of my life.
It's like
especially since I felt so filthy because I walked... Like, Nelly wasn't going to see 3-hour French
I didn't say
movie.
So you're by yourself.
So I was by myself.
Oh,
And were you wearing your hood like you're wearing it right now?
Yeah, and I'm tall, so I sit in the back of theaters. So it was just like...
Yeah, the whole story, right?
I wouldn't have liked to be around me at that time. But I liked it. Good movie.
Nice.
Alex, anything new with you?
Just finished Archer.
Nice.
Nice. That's a hilarious show.
I love it.
Have you started watching it? I know
I haven't started watching it. My wife is like, for some reason, has this like vendetta against the show. I don't know.
Oh, man.
Started.
She doesn't.
So it's like a lot of my free time. It's like, hey, I'm going to turn Archer on. No, I got to watch something else.
Give it two episodes. Yeah. You'll be convinced.
Yeah, I'm going to have to just have like midnight, you know, sneaking food.
There are 4 seasons of it on Netflix right now. So
yeah, and I need to watch it before they get rid of it. Like, take it off there. Like,
are they getting rid of it?
No, I'm just saying, like, you never know with Netflix. Like, they tell you, like, one day in advance, and then you go on there, and there's, like, 50 of the movies you were going to watch is gone.
Yeah.
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 And I just finished the Buck Angel documentary that was on Netflix.
I haven't seen that one.
It's awesome. His little, like, clitoris penis thing freaks me out, but other than that,
can you clarify a little bit?
Right, because I think I know what you're talking about.
It kind of looks like a penis, but it's
well,
like,
no. What is this thing? Isn't it this guy, or it's like a trans?
Well, it was a woman.
Yeah,
and she became
bald,
a man.
Like,
yeah,
really, like kind of muscle, like with this. You know, it kind of looks like a biker, like tough biker guy. Mm-hmm.
And it's bizarre because she does gay porn, or he does gay porn. But it's technically classified as heterosexual porn.
Right.
Because she is penetrated by gay men, or he is penetrated. It's just like, so it's this kind of gender mind fuck, and it's awesome.
Cool. All right. Yeah, I was in, I went to Denver last week. I'd never been there before. It was a pretty fun city. We ate at this really awesome restaurant called Linger, and it's just like street foods from around the world.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I had some African food. Some Asian food. It's nice.
Did you get sick?
No, I didn't get sick.
Did you, you know, some other things to partake of in
no,
Denver,
not
Colorado nowadays? I think that's all you really want.
Yeah, not Denver food. No, I went for a dermatology conference that my wife went to, so I just kind of tagged along.
So you know some doctors out there? Got some connects, I think, are how they...
I don't think... Connects. You don't need a doctor for those in Denver. They just have, like, stores. It's like a liquor store only.
I mean, is there, like, food everywhere now? Like, where
only it's a lot more brightly colored signs than most liquor stores.
Nice.
Yeah.
I think it's because, like, they need people to notice it. Because, like, when you're driving there, you're probably going to be a little, you know... It might be a little hazy, so you need something really bright to kind of attract you.
Oh, there it is.
Like, oh, yeah, that's where I was going.
Yeah. Right. It was a fun city, though. Really, really nice town. We hung out at this... It's a bar/arcade called The One Up, and that's so cool. It's got like a small bar and then just a ton of old arcade games. Like, we played the old Donkey Kong, and they had Mortal Kombat's 1, 2, and 3, and nice, a whole bunch of pinball machines. The bathrooms. I sent Kyle a picture of it. The bathroom signs. The boys as Pac-Man and the girls as Mrs. Pac-Man,
nice.
Or Ms. Pac-Man.
Ms. Pac-Man.
Sorry.
Even though they have a kid together.
Right. Oh, hey.
They're a modern couple.
Let's not throw stones here.
Yeah. All right. So in this week's episode, we're talking about Alfonso Cuarón's 2013 sci-fi epic, Gravity. It won, I believe. I should have looked this up. A
buttload of awards.
Yeah, all of them.
We'll say buttload since that's a non-specific number, but including... Alfonso Cuarón winning Best Director at this year's Oscars. I think it's like,
pretty much every technical,
all the technical awards,
sound, visual.
Yeah, a lot of people had this as their best movie of the year, including Kyle and Jake when we talked about our favorite stuff from the end of the year.
Did we?
From last year. I think so.
Oh, I don't even remember that.
So, Gravity, let's get into it. Initial thoughts, sir.
You know, I think it was really fitting that he won Best Director because I think 12 Years was a complete movie.
Mm-hmm.
Had unbelievable acting performances, you know, the costuming, the everything about it, and the direction was just amazing. And I think Gravity kind of definitely hinged on his vision. Choices.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he only had two actors, so... That was a lot of it, and it's just so much just about what he saw in his mind, you know, what he wanted the movie to be and how he brought it together. So I think initial thoughts are, I thought, you know, Clooney's been phoning it in to me for a while on most things. So, and I guess we'll probably get a little more into it later. I kind of wasn't that thrilled with Sandra Bullock's portrayal of the character or the way they wrote her character. I'm not sure which one.
Right.
Exactly. However, it has such high marks for me, though. Like, overall, though, I think it was phenomenal. I think it kind of, like, it really did its purpose and changed my views on, not changed my views, but, like, it was a, you know.
Yeah.
It was a movie. This is a good story, enlightening.
We'll stick with the technical aspects of it. Alex, off air, you were saying you saw it 2 days back to back in theaters in 3D.
Yeah.
Well, what? At the IMAX, right?
No, IMAX, just 3D.
That would be too expensive.
Right,
it's like $80.
Yeah.
You'd have to get another mortgage to see IMAX.
$80 a month.
Yeah. So what was it that drew you back in?
Well, so then the next week I saw Ender's Game, and what really struck me with that, Ender's Game is really reliant on kind of the same, like, flying around anti-gravity sort of thing. And it looked like all those kids were being hung by wires, like, compared to Gravity.
Yeah.
And I was just like, Jesus Christ. But Gravity, like, it was just so sort of minimalistic. And I don't know. It related to me. And I wish that it would have ended very differently. But that was my only letdown, was, like, when she crawled out of the water, I really either, like, wanted an alligator to eat her or, like, for her to be in some, like, parallel universe and have to keep on struggling.
So you wanted like the 2001,
like a more sci-fi,
right? Yeah. And I wanted Sandra Bullock to be in more pain.
Kyle, what did you think about the? We'll just stick with the visuals of it before we get into the sound.
With all of Alfonso Cuarón's movies, like Children of Men, I think is one of the most like visually stimulating movies. I don't really know how to explain
it's
like,
got two of my favorite shots
in movies. And this is like right up there. I mean, we're going to talk about it with tropes later, but Yeah, with the anti-gravity stuff that Alex was talking about, this movie I don't think will ever be dated. Like how there are movies like these sci-fi movies that we see years later, and they're like, oh wow, that's kind of cheesy. It's on a technical level, I don't think it could have done any better,
mm-hmm.
really. Because there are times, I mean, you don't actually believe that they're in space, but like, there's no moment where you're like, oh, that's a little weird. That's kind of cheesy.
And like, yeah, what Alex was saying, like with Ender's Game, there were a few moments like that.
Yeah.
And there's so much in this movie, like the bonus features on the Blu-ray. Did you get a chance to watch any of them, Kyle?
I didn't have the bonus features on the DVD that I had. Stupid DVD.
They show how much work actually went into creating the visual aspects of this. They invented like this light box thing that they recorded in. And when they were planning on making the movie initially, they wanted to, I think it's NASA has this thing called the Vomit Comet, where it's just a plane that goes up really high and then it just free falls and you're in a zero gravity environment for like 30 seconds. So a bunch of the crew went on that and they were, you know, considering that initially as a way to shoot the
movie.
That
would be the most impractical way to shoot.
Yeah, they said in 30 second chunks. they wanted to do these
long comes terror, into 30 the
seconds yeah.
each of pure terror.
Up the lens cap was on. We need to reach that shot. Yeah. It's like, oh, fuck that.
And the entire crew is like puking their brains out.
But like, just the whole movie is just about the details, and every little thing is thought out carefully. And yeah, there's only two actors, but I feel like Alfonso had so many different, like he had his hand in so many different parts of this movie. Like everyone who won an award for this movie, they thanked him, and like you could tell that he had a big influence on them. Or
yeah, and the way the movie was assembled, like almost nothing is actually shot because they didn't even have like face masks on their suits. And like the scene where she's spinning when she gets back into the thing where she's like being the fetus, they show the way they shot it, and like one of her legs isn't even real. One of her legs is like CGI'd basically, and you would never know watching the movie. Every single detail in that movie is basically, it's almost an animated movie, which shows like how much all of this had actual foresight. It wasn't just things in the background that happened to exist.
Yeah. I think he had some, you know, benefited that he was shooting a movie about space, just because, you know, even that scene with her in the capsule, it's, you know, because of the, it's like an almost an all white and like background, and she's just kind of spinning. You're not gonna notice as much as if she's sitting on a couch or doing something different. And then that like background of just all blackness, I mean, was like really, I think it really benefited just using the CGI.
Yeah. So this movie also won not just the technical awards, but also won best score. I like the score. I think I would have gone with her for best score, but this one's also, it's got some interesting musical things. What did you guys think about
it? Won best score?
Yeah.
That seems kind of interesting because I don't know, when I picture scores, I picture like the John Williams there where there's actually a theme or something, but, I mean, the music in this movie definitely fit what was going on because it didn't have that theme. It was like basically just sound effects that made you uncomfortable or were really intense at the right moments. But I guess when she's going back to Earth, like there's that really kind of epic orchestral thing going on. But it did win a lot of awards that it almost was kind of at the Oscars. It was kind of comical how many awards it won. Just... Oh, Gravity won again. But
I thought the moment I noticed it the most was when the debris cloud comes back around.
For the second time?
I think it's... Yeah, for the second time. And it almost reminded me of the Jaws.
It's like
the
swelling theme. Sort of...
Yeah, in that it made the debris cloud like... I mean, now to me, the debris cloud is like a villain.
Yeah.
You know, it was like its own terrible personality. And I thought that was pretty cool because I felt like the score it was really organic. Even though like there wasn't a theme, there wasn't like something that I can really pick out and remember how the tune went. However, the whole time I was watching the movie, it was just like the bones of the movie in a way. I think that's like one of the coolest things about it was that it was underneath the movie. You know, it didn't
like kind of supporting overpower.
It. Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, I thought like the ending. And those moments were more like
more of a movie than
almost more hammy.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of maybe not hammy, but we were talking about the acting a little bit. Sandra Bullock was nominated. George Clooney, really the only other person in the movie, was not nominated. How do you guys feel about the acting in this movie?
Sir, you had a problem with her, how she was written, really?
Yeah, I just felt that, so this isn't really all her fault. So I don't know if it was like, I don't know if it's how she portrayed it, how she decided to play the character, or how the character was written. I just thought that, you know, she kind of played the ditzy girl a little too much. She was written just as, and I would rather say she was written that way, because I don't want to assume that Sandra Bullock, a veteran actress, would play that part. So I kind of just felt that.
I think ditzy might be the wrong way to.
Well, like she like drops things. Just, she's like, you know.
But she's not. Like, she's not like, oh my, like she's not.
The at the
typical.
Same time, it's almost they take it as far as they can. And I think it's more a case of go-to like tropes. Where Hollywood's so comfortable with that portrayal, and they needed somebody who was more vulnerable, who was less experienced, who was more apt to make, you know, to mosey around, I think was the old term. So I think they kind of, their go-to was a woman. I think just the way that it was written, you know, it's one of those things. I think that, so I'm not sure if it was just her. And I felt that she...
That's a complaint that I've heard about the movie, that George Clooney is like the male and he knows more what's going on, and she's the woman and she's a little bit newer.
But I think it could have been tempered with a more like deliberately, I don't know, forceful maybe, I don't know, performance by Sandra Bullock. And it just kind of struck me as, it kind of took me out of the movie a little bit.
See, the way I looked at it though, and I can see that argument, I guess, but I saw it more as just like, she's the newbie and he's the veteran, he's on the path to retirement and she's clearly brand new, and her character has to be a female. Like, they could have circumvented that by having two male roles or two female roles. I don't know if Hollywood would have paid for two female roles, unfortunately. Right. And if they would have done two male roles, we would have lost a lot of the metaphor about, you know, the film being about rebirth and things like that. So
yeah, I mean, I get it.
I don't have a problem with that, but you're certainly not the only one who does. I think her performance is really good, though, in terms of, there are a lot of movies like this where it's only one person or for a large time, you know, Castaway, I Am Legend, things like that. I think her performance is my favorite out of all those movies that I can think of off the top of my head anyway.
I think out of the two Moon. In the movie, she's probably my favorite one.
Yeah, I might have to go Moon.
Yeah,
I think I have to go Sam Rockwell Moon over Sandra Bullock, actually. But
yeah,
I think she's a close second. I really like her in it.
She really did the like the struggling bit really well.
Yeah,
yeah, she's pretty believable. Yeah. Like that's in a disaster movie, that's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, what I like about how she's the newbie and he's the veteran, they still make them feel real by like the stories that he tells, or the with their conversations that they have when they're just floating in space, like talking about her family and everything, and everything feels real. And the fact that she's so new to this makes it more relatable to people like us. Like, what if we were in space and floating around?
I wouldn't
helpless,
know what to do.
Like, fuck that. Right. That's terrifying.
I could barely even drive here in the snow, let alone.
And I think the fact that it's almost shot like a documentary makes her acting seem a little like it doesn't feel like it's a movie in a way. It almost feels like they're just like showing her going through this sort of event and then just like filming it, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think not just Cuarón, but a lot of the credit has to go to Lubezki, who won for cinematography this year. So much of this movie, even though it's not all long takes, it's shot to look like an extended take from scene to scene, and I think that really helps draw you in a little bit more. It makes everything feel more real, and it's something they did in Children of Men. Like, there's a seemingly uncut, I think it's 13 minutes or something like that at the end of Children of Men, and it just makes you feel like you're on the battlefield with them. And I think that's something that they do in this movie really well.
There were a lot of like really wide shots that just like made you feel like you were getting sucked into space, and really well done.
Yeah, and I have to say, I saw it in theaters in 3D, and I was worried rewatching it that some of those shots wouldn't have the same effect on, you know, the TV at home. And I watched it again and liked it pretty much just as much as I did the first time I saw it. So I think even on a regular size screen, it holds up.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Pretty damn well.
I was actually more worried about the audio not holding up, because the audio is so, just the mix of it, like that beginning shot where it's so loud and then it cuts to nothing and it almost hurts your ears how intense that is. Like, that is best in the theaters. You can't really replicate that. And but
what I loved was the silence when George Clooney's ghost is breaking in the capsule and the door opens. And the second time I watched it, I noticed, and I was aware of it the first time I watched it, that no one in the theater was breathing. Like, the door opened and it was dead silent.
Because everyone's going, at like the exact same time. Because you know, like, why is he doing that?
And it's so cool because it almost tips, you know, that she's hallucinating, because like, he opens it and there's really no effect on her.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just, it was a great moment.
Although, according to the television series Battlestar Galactica, people can survive in that type of environment for short periods of time. So,
that's right,
sir. In your face. Onto the storytelling elements. When I saw this in theaters for the first time, as I've said on the show, basically stress ate an entire bucket of popcorn straight watching this movie. How did you guys feel about just the way the story unfolds?
White knuckles.
Jake, when we saw it, was literally on the edge of his seat the entire time, like leaning forward, like almost falling out of his chair, like trying to see as close as possible.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was really cool how, I mean, it was definitely suspenseful. I mean, there were so many moments where, I mean, like Kyle saying, like, the best part about her character being more inexperienced was, you know, that's how most of us would feel, like, in space. And it was just really terrifying at times. And when she gets back to Earth, you know, it's funny because, like, that scene of her, like, you know, she's like, gripping the sand. I mean, there's so many scenes like that, you know, where guys get back to Earth and kiss the ground, whether it's played for laughs or whatever. That was the realest one I've ever seen, though. I mean, you go from this environment in space where you really kind of, because of the way it's shot, and I imagine in theaters it must have been even like more impactful. It's just total blackness, and then she gets to Earth, and it's like, you know, there's an atmosphere, there's colors, there's like this green, and I really felt that. I thought, too, like the religious stuff, obviously. You know, it was pretty neat to see kind of a blending of different things. Clooney mentions the River Ganges, like when he's basically dying, and that's like the Hindu river of life and death. You know, he's on his way out. She sees a little icon of Saint Christopher, who is the saint of traveler. Yeah, and there are other images where he's actually dog-headed and he has armor, and it kind of, he like symbolizes just like protecting you in her way. And then at the end, it's a statue of the Buddha, which is not Buddha. It's like the future Buddha. And that concept kind of is like that there's enlightenment in everyone. And it kind of, it's like, you know, so there, it really just ties all that stuff. I mean, there, it was perfectly paced, you know, when they showed those images. And I like how they used a bunch of different ones. And then, of course, the ending where she's, you know, the amphibian. It's like a frog goes before her, frog, and then she comes out. Yeah. So it's kind of like, you know, it's the, I would almost say not, I'd hate to say typical, however, Hollywood goes to this blending of religion and science a lot lately, and it's only been done well probably twice to me on screen, and that was one of the times. So.
Yeah, I like the ending, how it's not just she's more amphibious when she lands in the water, and then as she gets out, she's on four limbs, and then she gets on two and like starts to walk, so it's kind of the evolution to the state of man. And then Kyle brought up something as the rocket, or as the... Is the debris? I mean,
we're talking over my trope, but it'll be fine. But yeah, when the debris is going towards Earth, it almost looks like dozens of little sperm going towards Earth, and it's like it's pretty weird if you look at it like that. But
there's another scene that really struck me. It was this image where it's when she gets really upset. She finds out there's no fuel in the Suzu or something like
that. I forget what they're called.
And she's like, like thrashing in there, and when it pulls out,
it almost
the surface of the ship seems almost like leathery. Almost, if you know, I think because of the, you know, there's some kind of weird aluminum type thing over top of it, and so you see all these wrinkles, and in the blackness, it almost looks like elephant skin or something like that, and it just looks really organic, and it's pulling out. And you just see her thrashing around in there, of course, like a child in the womb, and it's just perfectly shot. It's a great moment, and it was so small that you kind of just felt it more than you actually saw it, you know?
Yeah, and then of course there's the rebirth scene when she first gets, when she gets into the first spacecraft, and she's basically a fetus floating with an umbilical cord and everything. I think there's, for most of the scenes when she's outside of the spacecraft, you're really not seeing much. So the scenes where she's actually inside and there are all these other details around, each detail kind of means something. Like that frog in the water is not an accident.
Yeah.
So before we get into our tropes, do you guys have a favorite part of this movie?
Definitely when, like, that moment when George Clooney opens the hatch and climbs in, or his ghost or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, after watching it the first time and then watching the short and hearing Alfonso's kind of explanation of where that story came from, I really like that, the whole her talking to that
Anangog.
Yeah,
I was gonna say the first time I saw the movie,
because I didn't really like that scene, was kind of strange the first time you watch it, because at least for me, I was like, oh, this is kind of weird, like the guy's barking at her and she's barking back. But
yeah, what's the story behind that? Yeah.
We'll get into it in one of my tropes. But I was gonna say that when at the end of our, in our year-end episode, I think I listed just the very opening is one of my favorite scenes, and then also the rebirth scene. But watching it a second time, her scene where she's talking to Anangok and she's basically accepting her own death, it hit me a lot harder the second time. I think that was my favorite scene coming out of it. I was also, I've decided to do this thing when I'm finished with work, like when I'm post-call and I haven't slept for 24 hours. Instead of going to sleep, I try to stay up and watch a movie in this state of like fucked up delirium. and it makes me a little bit weird. In that scene, I watched it and I was incredibly tired, and it just hit me like in a very emotional way.
Did you start crying?
No, I didn't start crying, but she did, man. And I was like reaching for her tear. I was like,
that's like, awesome.
I feel you, Sandy.
Because you can't cry, tears. You kind of needed to, you wanted to possess tears of your own.
Because I'm dead inside.
Right. Yeah.
As it's been mentioned.
Yes. Sir, what was your favorite part of the movie?
I don't want to step too much on my tropes. I think I'll save my...
I'll use
my second one, I think. The scene where he's talking to her as he's floating away. Just something, I mean, just wow.
And how he's saying he's going to break the spacewalk.
Yeah, and no one's going to touch
it. And I love when he's like, you know, talking about like his eyes and stuff, because it's, you would think that it would be reversed, or he'd be like, you know, now that we're alone, like, you're really beautiful. And it's just awesome George Clooney, like more like ER George Clooney, where he's just like completely about himself.
I feel like that's just George Clooney.
Yeah, and it was cool because I feel like that kind of was his, that worked better than saying you're beautiful, and that to her was getting her to talk about him, and that was pretty neat.
Alrighty. So that was our discussion on Gravity. If you have your own thoughts, let us know at onthetropes@gmail.com. After the break, we are going to talk about our top five favorite tropes used in the movie Gravity.
I thought this tape was going to be a f***ing conversation stimulator, man. I was going to ask you for your top five records to play on a Monday morning and all that, and you just had to f***ing ruin it.
Well, we'll do it next Monday.
No! I'm going to do it now!
Welcome back to episode 39 of On the Tropes. We are talking about our top five favorite tropes used in the motion picture Gravity, also known as 9.8 meters per second per second. Kyle. What was your favorite, my fifth favorite
trope is actually one that's averted in this movie, and it's space is noisy. And I mean, we talked about how the movie is technically is amazing. So they, of course, they do that whole, there's no sound in space really well. And everything you hear while they're out in space is literally just like what's vibrated off their gloves and their suits. So this really horrific shit is happening in the background, and you can like kind of hear it. And then when they like grab something that is vibrating, or you can hear it a lot stronger. And then I think they just do all that sort of space chatter with the people on the ground really well, and kind of joking around with them, but also being informed of what the hell is going on. And that scene where the sir was talking about, with where the fuel goes down and she's like banging in the cabin, and then they pull out and she's
banging.
She's you know, and they pull out and they're outside of the
they're
ship.
Banging and then they pull out.
Jesus Christ. And it just go it goes with that whole in space no one can hear you scream thing, and yep. she's making a lot of noise in the cabin.
No one can hear you cream.
Anyway, that's my number five.
Gross.
Alex, do you have a fifth favorite trope?
No, I actually, what I told Sir, I had no idea what a trope was until this afternoon.
It's a learning, yeah. It's a learning experience for you.
Right.
It is. This is the show to learn it on, then, because yeah. This is the show about tropes.
Mm-hmm. Sir, what's your number five?
My number five is jetpacks, just because, I mean, they're awesome, and I thought it was really cool to see how a real-world jetpack would work in like, the only environment that it would be really, really useful right now, and just because our technology for... You know, in atmosphere jetpacks, it's just terrible right now.
This is the year 2014. If people are listening to this in the future, we don't currently have jetpacks.
Yeah, right. And they're probably disappointed.
What was that James Bond movie in space? They had jetpacks.
Moonraker?
Yes. Yes. I think that's like the only other. Gravity and Moonraker are very similar.
Yeah.
I bet they are.
I have to say, I like George Clooney's jetpack being sweet, and then I like Sandra Bullock's improvised jetpack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. So Nick, what's your number five?
My number five is the trope, All Just a Dream, and it's the scene that we've talked about, just George Clooney coming back. It's so jarring when it happens, and it seems like that shouldn't be right. Like, how could he possibly have made it back, and how is she not getting yanked out when he opens the cabin door?
But everyone is so relieved when... he comes back, they're like,
you know, and then it's just a real, like, it's kind of kicking the balls when it was all just a dream. But at the same time, it really helps bring her out. She stops giving up and she says, fuck it, I'm either gonna make it home or die trying, just like 50 Cent, right. I think that was the name of that album. My corollary to this trope is the movie Mulholland Drive, and I'll just leave it at that. I don't want to go too much into it, but there's some dreamlike, obviously it's David Lynch, some dreamlike elements that David Lynch uses to mess with you. Kyle, what's your number four?
My number four also has to do with George Clooney's character. You talk too much. Kowalski's character, George Clooney's character, he's just so charming. And he's like, anytime he's on screen, he's talking. And he's just, he really keeps Sandra Bullock's character alive just by telling these stories and by keeping her calm and keeping her level-headed. And in the movie people complain that he talks too much, or he keeps repeating his stories over and over again, but they like when he's not there, she like begs for him to finish his stories and like wants him there to comfort her. And when he comes back, like you said, it's like it's comforting. So you talk too much is my fourth trope. Sir, what's your number four?
My number four is scenery porn, and just like some of the shots in this movie were just amazing. I think it's the Aurora Borealis she sees. It's like this, I don't know if she sees it. It's like this green, like in one of the scenes, she sees Earth.
Does she? Aurora Borealis at this time of year in this hemisphere, located directly within your kitchen. What? It's from The Simpsons. Yeah.
It's something she sees. It's like the screen. And I'm not at all like an astronomy person. So
you're
I'm
not?
Just guessing. And so yeah, like a lot of shots were, you would, of course, this is a movie about space, and it was the big space shot movie. And the fact that it pulled it off and was actually successful, I was really impressed with. Because like the trailers were completely just selling the whole space porn thing. Mm. And totally fulfilled.
Yeah. Sidebar, probably not the best way to watch Cosmos, but I was watching it on my iPad on the plane ride home from Denver, and I had to turn it off because the dude sitting next to me kept trying to watch over my shoulder, and I'm like, man, you gotta stop peering over here.
If that was real porn, that would have been so much weirder.
Yeah, it was just space porn. But yeah, I was like, dude, quit looking over here.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
Made me mad. So I kept switching back to like
porn.
Yeah, to actual porn. And he was like, ew.
I'm right. A Christian.
Nick, what's your number four?
My number four is the trope minimal cast. Obviously, there's, I think, three people in this. The one guy you really see more of with a hole in his face.
I was going to say, you see a lot of the inside of his face.
Yeah, you see a picture of his family and then the inside of his head. You see Clooney.
He does dance pretty cool in Zero G.
And Ed Harris is credited as being one of the people. But really,
Space
it's...
Space Command?
Yeah, really, it's only two people in this movie. And I think that's it's just a nicer way of reflecting the isolationism of Sandra Bullock's character.
Which, sadly, I feel like a lot of people kind of, for that reason, they almost don't consider it a movie. It's in that same category as, like, I mean, I guess Castaway's more Hollywood-y, but, like, I know a lot of people who are like, it's not a movie, it's just like a, even know what they would call it, but it's definitely different, but I don't really know how to explain
it. Did Ed Harris get an Academy Award?
For this?
Yeah.
Yeah, Best Supporting Ground Control.
Awesome.
Ground Control?
Yeah.
I think they just wanted them to have one more award.
And he got the Lifetime Achievement Award for The Rock. My corollary to the minimal cast trope
you need
is
to stop with these.
I like
coronaries.
Coronary. That's the arteries to the heart. The movie Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? There's really only four people in it, and I think it's Liz Taylor's best movie. It's a messed up movie, like based on Edward Albee play. It's very disturbing, actually, and especially considering it's like 50 or so years old. It's a good one. Kyle, what's your number three?
My number three is the symbolism of rebirth that is all over this movie. She basically dies and is reborn in that scene where she makes it back inside and she has that sort of fetus shot with the fake leg, apparently. Yeah. But there's just like a lot of other little things, like that she has like some kind of helmet that makes her look like she's like bald and as a baby, and the whole Onigog lullaby, like he's kind of singing to her in a way. And then the whole sperm going towards Earth and the swimming, crawling, walking thing, and there's just a lot of that symbolism seen in this movie. And like normally I don't really pick up on a lot of this like cool symbolism, but I think this one kind of hits you over the head, and it's anyone who doesn't really see it, it's kind of, I don't know, not looking at it right, so but
they're fools and they're better.
Yeah, like if I can see it, then anyone can see it, I guess.
Kyle's not a fundamentalist.
I'm not. I just like watching movies, and if I think it's symbolism, then I like, I don't know. Sorry, what's your number three?
My number three is Exact Time to Failure, and just how I thought it was so cool how the debris field comes back around every 90 minutes, and so it's like something so terrible, and then you know, she knows exactly when it's going to happen. And of all the things to, like, I like how it's just, like, completely against orbit. So natural. And it's, like, totally inescapable. And, man, that debris field. Man.
Yeah. The other thing I like about that is that they're saying it only comes back every 90 minutes. The movie's only 90 minutes long.
Right.
So the movie only takes place over the span of a few hours, really, which is kind of cool. There aren't a lot of movies that run in almost real time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's definitely neat. So, Nick, what's your number three?
My number three is it's the trope double meaning title. And obviously, gravity refers to that force discovered by a scientist of some sort. I forget which one. But as I alluded to earlier, it's 3.8 meters per second per second. So it could be that that's what the gravity refers to. But it could also just be the gravity of the situation. Mm. They're in space. They're stuck. There's bad things going on, and that holds a lot of gravity on its own.
Plus, you know, being stuck alone with George Clooney. I mean,
yeah.
And it ends, and she can't walk, and she's like, oh, fuck, gravity.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And she's like, oh, I wish I would have stayed in space. Yeah. I think that's the message of the movie, actually. Is to stay.
Stayed in space.
Stay in space. My corollary to this is...
we're doing corollaries for each one?
I am. Because that's my thing with my shtick. It's the film High Fidelity. Because High Fidelity can refer to the record type, but it also refers to fidelity and infidelity of relationships. And that fucking Ian guy. Kyle.
What fucking Ian guy?
Kyle, what is your number two favoriteest trope?
My number two favoriteest trope
from Gravity
is camera abuse. which is a trope that Alfonso Cuarón loves to do in his movies. We were talking about Children of Men earlier.
It's where he drinks a lot of cameras, and
yeah,
I know what this trope is already.
He likes to just inject cameras into his veins, and yes,
just based on the description, I know this and I like it.
Yep, it's basically just where the camera is like in the movie, and stuff will splatter on it or it'll get thrown around. And I kind of, I don't know if there's another trope that's just like first person view, but this movie does a lot of those, like puts you in the head of Sandra Bullock's character really well. There's a good shot where she's like trying to do something inside the cabin, and it shows her hands and like what she's trying to do. Mm-hmm. And when she's spinning around in space, like it just, the camera, you can tell, goes through like a lot of shit. Mm-hmm. During the making of this movie. And
but there are also scenes where like you're saying, stuff splatters onto the camera and they just leave it there, and they did the same thing with blood in Children of Men.
Yeah, Children of Men. Yeah, it's awesome. And yeah, that scene in Children of Men with the raid on the car too is also really intense, because the camera is like, it does some like really crazy shit. And camera abuse, number two. Sir.
Number two, armor-piercing question, and it's just when, basically, Clooney's ghost is just asked her straight up, "Do you want to go home or stay up here?" And it was a really effective use of that trope, just because, man, you know, just totally blunt, and I think sometimes you need that. And it's like, and then kind of later, he's talking about how comfortable it would be to just kind of drift off.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really just hits home that, you know, she's just, you know, how hopeless she is, and then how relatively peaceful the environment is. It kind of would be kind of seductive in that moment. So, Nick, what's your number two?
My number two is a trope called "anyone can die." So there's Kowalski, and then the other guy. The other guy dies in the first maybe 15 minutes of the movie. Maybe 20 minutes after that, Kowalski's pretty much dead. Okay. And then you're just living with Sandra Bullock for the rest of the movie. So the fact that they've killed off 67% of the cast already means the entire rest of the movie, you're just really not sure if Sandra Bullock... In a lot of movies, you would know that she's going to be okay. But the first time you watch this, I feel like the way the story unfolds, you really don't know whether or not she's going to make it or not. And I think that's a great way of keeping the viewer in suspense. My corollary is
the book version of The Mist.
nice. It's got to get brought up eventually. In Buffy the Vampire Slayer, in the first couple episodes, there's like Buffy, and then she is starting at a new school with she meets Xander, Willow, and this other guy who's set up to be a main character. And Joss Whedon actually wanted to put him in the theme song, or in the credits in the beginning, because he dies in the first episode, and he wanted to set up this universe in which, you know what, you think he's going to be a cast member for the entire show, and we kill him off, so nobody in the show is safe from being being killed. The only reason they didn't do it is because they just couldn't afford to redo it for one episode.
What?
which sucks, but it shows the way that dude likes to create things. Like he really.
What a lame choice by the studio.
Yeah, he's really going out of his way to fuck with the viewers when he can. So I really appreciate that about that show. There's a lot of other shows now that are,
Game of Thrones.
Doing that pretty well. Game of Thrones is one of them.
Yeah.
So
scene being, man.
Whoa, spoilers.
Spoilers, like how many years ago?
Not a real scene. Kyle.
Yes, sir.
What's your number one?
My number one is the trope that I actually thought about when I was watching this movie for the first time, which is kind of strange, but a meaningful background event, which is a lot of this movie, where it's just something's going on in the foreground, and then something is going on in the background as well that you need to pay attention to, because there's actually like a reason for it happening. And that's basically just what this sort of villainous satellite debris that's constantly a threat in this movie. And I think the second time that it happens, it's a bigger deal, because she's trying to do something. I think she's trying to free the little parachute from the ship, and of course she can't hear it coming, and she's just working on it, and then you see all this shit happening like right behind her, and it's The fact that there's no sound at all is terrifying, and it's just, I don't know. That's like one of those sort of white knuckle scenes that is just so intense, and the fact that there's no sound to really follow it is also just adds to it. So it's just one of those things that go on in the background of the scene that you really need to pay attention to, and it's really meaningful. So, sir, what's your number one?
So number one is heroic death, or in slash cold equation, it's heroic sacrifice. And I just thought it was really one of the best ones I think I've seen in years. I mean, it was so amazing when he's like, holding that thing. And you know what he's thinking as soon as it happens. Mm-hmm. You can kind of see the look on his face. It just totally drops. It's like the one moment in the movie where I was like, man, George Clooney really worked out. He really, like, he put some work in that moment because it was so perfect. And it's just like, wow. I love the cold equation part, that it's just, he knows, you know, down to probably how many feet he could have survived. And as soon as that happens, he's like experienced enough to know he's done completely.
Yeah, that's what something that people complain about the movie. They're like, oh, it's not realistic because with gravity and the momentum and blah blah blah, he wouldn't have actually. And it's like, I don't know the physics, but who fucking cares?
Yeah, right.
You're missing the point.
I looked into that though, and I don't know if, you know, to the people maybe listening who feel that way, the two people who said that are like an amateur astronomer and like just somebody with even less credentials, and then the guy who worked on the movie was actually like walked in space. So
yeah,
like, I'm kind of, and the other astrophysicist, like the other like actual astronauts, I mean, who saw the movie didn't say anything about it, so I figure it must have seemed pretty realistic to them.
Yeah, those same people didn't have a problem with the fact that Sandra Bullock is actually named Sandra Bullock and not Ryan Stone, and George Clooney is not named Matt Kowalski.
Yeah. He may not even have gray hair. I think maybe he dyes it.
Yeah. So,
do you think those people have seen Moonraker?
Those people probably love Moonraker. The main complaint actually about the movie Gravity is that there's not enough moonraking in it.
Yeah, or nudity.
Yeah.
So Nick, what's your number one?
My number one is it's the trope bilingual bonus, and Kyle was talking about it a little bit, but there's a short film that was directed by Jonas Cuarón. He helped co-write the story, and he's Alfonso Cuarón's son, and that movie's called Anangak, and it's basically the scene of Sandra Bullock talking to Anangak, the guy over the radio, but from his point of view. And in that story, they actually have subtitles, and it just shows it. It makes that whole interaction a little bit more interesting, just because Anangak has his own shit going on too. Like, he's not just some dude on the other end of a phone. And then you hear Sandra Bullock from his point of view, and he has no idea what's going on. It's just some woman. So it's like a very interesting thing where the first time you see the movie, it's from her point of view, where we see what she sees and you don't really know what's going on, and then you learn a little bit more, and it has this extra cool layer to it. And there are a lot of movies that do this. I think two of my favorite ones are at the end of Let the Right One In, when he Morse codes something to the girl
in the box.
She's in the box. Yeah. What he Morse codes is the word kiss, which I like. And then in the movie Once, the guy is asking the girl some stuff in Romanian or whatever language it is that she speaks.
Oh yeah.
And he asks her, how do you say, do you love him? And she says something back to him, and it never explains what it is. He has no idea.
There's no subtitles.
He doesn't know what she says, but what she actually says is, it is you who I love. And it's just like, ugh, what a good movie. What a damn fine movie. That's romantic.
It's adorable. Adorbs.
Love that movie. So, those were our top five tropes used in the movie Gravity. Overall, guys, thumbs up to Gravity. Four thumbs up?
Thumbs up.
Yeah.
Four thumbs? Or is it eight thumbs? Do they count everybody's thumbs?
Yeah, we only have one thumb each?
Ebert and Siskel. I like to put Ebert first. Because he didn't. I think that's a little bit more fair. Ebert and Siskel used to only give one each.
He said he didn't what?
We should give two.
Two each?
Two, if we feel that way. I mean, we should.
Okay.
Maybe some people feel like one.
I give two.
Two.
Yeah.
Eight thumbs up.
Eight thumbs up.
Put that on the poster, right, motherfuckers.
So at the end of the movie,
that makes it seem like it's a perfect movie, though. Like, what? It's perfect.
I mean, it did win Best Picture.
Right.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, it actually didn't.
At the end of the movie, when Sandra Bullock's character is crawling out of the lagoon, how do you think she felt about Russians?
Yeah, I totally forgot to bring that up. That this Putin has had a hard, like, fast couple years, man. Like, he just keeps getting hit. He caused that whole disaster.
Right.
It's like, wow.
She got fucked up twice on that.
Yeah. It was all their fault.
Or three times. I don't know.
Mm. They need to be. I think the point of this movie is be careful.
Don't go to space.
With your trash.
Yeah.
Yeah. Russia.
Reduce. The tagline was gravity. Reduce, reuse, recycle.
Somehow this ties into the current incidents.
Be kind, rewind.
Yeah, exactly. Join us after the break, and we have some listener feedback from the last few episodes to tackle.
Woo. You like drinking? Sure you like drinking. Who the hell don't? Well, if you like drinking as much as me on iTunes, poor boy Kyle gets drunk every week for you, the listener. This episode brought to you by On the Rocks Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 39 of On the Tropes. We are hitting up some listener feedback. It's been a while since we've done this. The first one, it's a couple emails from Lawrence H. He says, you guys make a great podcast. I started listening a few weeks ago and it helps me get through my workday. And then talks about how TVTropes.org basically is a time warp that can ultimately cost you many, many hours of your day. But in a good way.
Yeah, there's 12 step for TV Tropes, I'm pretty sure.
So he says he's nearly caught up, and at the time of this email, he's listening to episode 29 on Deadpan Snarkers. He says, props for mentioning Todd Barry, one of my favorite stand-up comedians. That's my pick. You're welcome. He says a few of his picks for Deadpan Snarker would be Daria, which I think we talked about, if not on that episode, a different
episode. Yeah, I wasn't on that episode, however. We've talked about Daria. I brought it up.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Jeff Winger from Community, which didn't make that episode, but we've talked about him on other shows. And Jeremy Clarkson from the TV show Top Gear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about Carl Pilkington?
Who?
The guy that he was a producer for Ricky Gervais, and Ricky Gervais tries to like paint him as really dumb and stupid, but he's actually like just fucking brilliant. Deadpan.
I feel like the British people do deadpan so well. Like, have you guys seen the show The Peep Show?
No,
I've been watching a lot of British Parliament lately, though. And man, those guys really go in, like, and it's that kind of like
they throw shit at each other.
Yeah, it's like subtle, and yet, like they can really kind of insult each other in there. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of humor in it. Yeah, and it's like, you know, and that's like their whole thing.
So Lawrence emailed us again. He opened the first email with OTT Bros. On the second one, it's OTT People, which I guess. It was after we had a female on the show, but it seems just a little less personal. I think Lane would have been cool with being lumped in with the bros.
Yeah.
He says, I guess I'm due for a critical email after last week's praise. He had some issues with the robot episodes, and mainly he says the topic is simply too broad, which I think.
Yeah, it's funny because when we were planning that episode, that's you know, I know it was brought up a couple times.
That we were worried about, and we did say, hey, we'll at least exclude cyborgs.
Yeah,
but there were a lot of topics that,
you know, on our original show before this, we split them up into I think androids and robots. And
I think it was robots and cyborgs too.
Yeah, because we had an androids episode too, though.
Did we?
Where like we tried to didn't we?
I think it was robots and cyborgs. But another gripe he had was HAL 9000 is arguably not a robot. HAL is artificial intelligence, while AI is often a component of robots, especially androids.
Did someone have HAL on that episode?
Yeah, I felt that way for sure.
It is
when that was put on the list.
It is essentially a form of computer software and possibly very specialized hardware.
Who had HAL on there?
I can't remember.
You did?
I remember disagreeing.
I mentioned
with that
it. I don't remember if it was.
Yeah.
So I emailed him.
Well,
back.
I also had I had Megazord on my episode, and he's not really like he's
like
a vehicle.
Mecha. Yeah, I mean, I didn't.
And
agree
I'm
with
surprised.
That
I'm surprised no one like. I had a friend of mine say that he was glad that I brought him up, but if you think about it, he's just a vehicle. But
yeah, so I think HAL's fair though. I can see the arguments against it, but I even emailed back and said I think with
did you argue your point?
I did argue. So my point is that in the movie Her, Samantha is just OS. I think it would be fair to not call her a robot. But in Hal, he basically is the ship. Like, he controls the ship, and in that way, he's kind of, he has a body. He's corporeal. So I think calling him a robot is fair.
Was your email more like, hey, Lenny, get your own show?
No, no, we love the listeners.
Yeah.
But no, I see his point. And
I actually agree with him on both of those.
You see his point, but you felt the need to argue back with him.
Yeah.
That's how I do. But eventually we will get into more dedicated episodes to the robot subtropes. It was like our first live episode, so we wanted to tackle something that we'd tackled on the old show just so we were a little bit more comfortable about it. We also have an email from Thomas from Australia, and he just wrote in with a top five robot list. I'll read some of them off. Bender from Futurama. Did that make anybody's list?
I left it off because I thought it would.
I think
a lot of, like, more than.
I'm nearly positive it made my list, and we did it on the old show. And I think I just left him off for sake of not wanting to repeat myself, even though people haven't listened to the old show. But yeah, I mean, great pick. He's that show's Homer, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Wally from Wally is his number four. Legion from Mass Effect 2 / HK-47 from KOTOR 1, 2, and TOR.
Man.
I don't know what a lot of that means.
No.
HK-47? Is that what it is? Yeah. He's just basically just like an asshole bounty hunter assassin robot guy. He's like really badass.
Mm-hmm. His number two is Dr. Nefarious from Ratchet and Clank.
Nice. Video game.
Some video
guy.
Game stuff. And wow. Then number one, and I do not know how that, we didn't talk about this the entire show, and I'm not sure how. Number one, Transformers.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Wait, are you being sarcastic as to why we didn't talk about it? Aren't Transformers actually aliens?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that counts as robots. I think
that's why I
didn't mechanical intelligence.
But we talked about Iron Giant. Like Iron Giant.
I think we talked about it in our original episode, but not the newer
one.
I think Iron Giant's also an alien. So.
I see what you mean in that they're not created by man.
Is that a thing for
I guess
robots?
They could probably be lumped into the
I don't even know what
episode.
The definition
just,
of a robot is.
If we do aliens and somebody pulls Transformers.
What was the crazy smash 'em up movie with the guy from The Wire in it recently? The like Poseidon?
Pacific Rim.
Or Pacific Rim, yeah. There were robots in there.
See, I think... I wanted to do a mecha episode where it's like, you know, giant robot suits. Yeah.
Talk about Titanfall.
Because I feel like we could do some more. Like, we could do less than those. So, I think.
Lastly, an email from Paul from the UK. I would say one of our biggest fans.
Yeah.
We get a lot of support from Paul. He writes in saying, I know that this may be a long shot, but knowing that you guys do love a good drama and must have seen The Wire, since it has been discussed in several episodes on your podcast, I was wondering if you could do a podcast about the program. I know it had ended several years ago, but it's still seen as one of the greatest dramas to have ever graced TV. There are plenty of tropes to play around with.
It's still fresh in my soul.
Yeah, I've been calling for this for.
I would need to watch more than a couple episodes.
I'm totally with you, Paul. Like, I've been voting for this one.
And I threw Kyle under the bus to Paul. And that Kyle's not watched it. So, Kyle.
Wait, you threw me under the bus to him already?
I think you
threw him under the lorry. I think that's how Paul would say.
I've seen a few episodes, but not.
You just got to plow through the whole thing.
Yeah.
HBO Go, watch it. Take a week
where does
off.
It, where does this show rank up in your show? Your favorite show?
Number one.
Number one. Over Breaking Bad,
over Sopranos, over Twin Peaks, over Battlestar Galactica.
It's not money over everything. It's
number
Wire
two.
Over everything.
Gotta say, probably.
And how it ends is the greatest.
Oh, I love how it ends.
Okay. Oh, man.
I think maybe The Simpsons, though, is really my number one.
Because I've been hearing all this stuff about how Dexter's ending, and like I want to get back into that, but how it ends kind of throws me.
Yeah, I know how Dexter ends, and it's doesn't sound like it's the best, and I know a lot of people had a problem with it.
It's like, how do you get excited to watch something when you know it doesn't end well? So,
yeah,
I really love
how The Wire ends.
Yeah.
It's just such a good show. I told him eventually we will do it if you don't get to it in time, maybe like on a time when you're out of town or something, we can do a bonus of it, but it is something fun
setting all this recording up without me.
it is something that we want to do. So Kyle, the onus is on you.
Okay, how many seasons?
Only five.
Five, yeah.
Do you have all of them?
They're on HBO Go. I have the first three.
I try like at least twice a week to make a Wire reference, like a really obscure Wire reference to like a really dumb bartender, and they're just like, "What the fuck?" And I'm just like, "Nah."
If they're new, do you give them a Eugene? You green Johnny?
How many times have you just been like, "Shit!"
Like if I walk in and the bar has like a brand new floor or something is really nice, I'm like, "Oh, this is like season 5 to season 3 of The Wire." Like you just completely made yourself over. Way to go!
who's that one character that you kept quoting?
Omar.
Yeah, what does he say?
It's just Owen D.
Owen D, yeah.
Yeah, I always say Owen D. Omar's the... Oh, man.
You're the man that took my boy down.
There's so many good characters in that show.
It's just... Yeah, I can't wait for that episode.
Yeah.
It's going to happen now, apparently.
Yeah, it'll happen. Paul. It's on the radar, Paul. It's something we definitely want to do.
Hold tight.
Yeah. So stay tuned. Yeah, so that was episode 39. Do you guys have anything you want to plug, sir? Where would they find us on the internet?
Well, they could go to Facebook, www.facebook.com/onthetropes.
They could also find us on
Twitter.
Twitter.
At twitter.com/onthetropes. Is that how Twitter works? Yeah. You can just do mm-hmm. on at onthetropes?
Mm-hmm. It depends on...
Type it in. Yeah.
At.
Yeah.
Yep.
You can... find us on iTunes, click the little subscribe button, and register a review. It helps people find us.
You can send us an email at
gmail.com at onthetropes.gmail.
Yeah, I was going to say, strike that, reverse it.
People know. People, I give people credit for knowing the Gmail is the thing behind the at.
Right.
Yeah, Alex, do you have anything that you'd like to plug outside of... Do you have a personal website or
a phone number you'd like to give out?
Address? Or I mean,
I actually just had some business cards made up, and I was like, oh, wow, this is cool, but I don't have a website.
Do you want to mail them out to the listeners?
No, not
send
really.
Send us your mailing address, and we'll send you one of Alex's business cards.
If you have a beer-related problem, let me know.
Do you have any beer-related problems?
Yes.
He will drink the beer.
Give us, Alex, since we've got you here,
give you a yeast infection.
Give us one kind of beer that you think is extra delicious, and then give us one just beer drinking advice.
Yeah,
or overrated beer,
or any beer related advice. So
beer related. Okay, if a beer is highly related, like highly rated on the internet, it will let you down because hipsters are full of shit.
What about PBR?
Wait, it's very sweet and tastes like corn.
Wait, don't hipsters not like to rate anything? They like things that aren't talked about, so...
Yeah, right, they're curiously everywhere online.
Like, the internet is ran by hipsters, especially beer internet.
We're more like proto-hipsters, kind of like Trevor from GTA 5.
Nice. So give us something tasty.
Gosh, my recommendation is always just find something local.
Yeah.
So
we've got a bunch of good local stuff around these here parts. So local listeners, have you ever been to the Bottle House up in Cleveland?
I have actually. They just became one of my customers. So
did
they? Excited. So they now have really clean beer lines.
Nice. That's they're right down the street from my place. It's a very good. Yeah. Jake Kellogg was dog sitting for us while we were in Denver, and apparently every time Nelly would text him to check on the dog, he would say, "Oh, I'm at Bottle House right now, but the dog's doing good."
Nice. The dog was there drinking with him, I assume.
Yeah.
I think that it's kind of neat to see like the craft beer bar model disappear, and it's sort of just becoming a bar again. So like, it's just a bar with some really tasty shit on draft, and that's how it should be. When things like are special, it kind of annoys me. It's obnoxious.
So your advice, local.
Just drink beer. Drink beer.
Grassroots.
Drink all the beer.
drink all the beer.
Drink as much beer as possible.
Yeah.
That's a t-shirt waiting.
But yeah, local beer is best.
Yeah, I agree. I usually hate the local stuff. Yeah. All right. So episode 39, Gravity. Let us know what you think. And join us next week. We're going to be talking about the trope Only Sane Man. So until then, I have been Nick, and we have been...
Sir?
And Alex, thanks for having me.
And Kyle.
And join us next week when we'll again be stuck on the tropes.